All right, we're going to get this committee commenced here. Tape, very good. This is the Monday, February 11th, 2013, meeting of the Transportation and Public Safety Committee meeting. Members, we have two bills on the agenda, and then we're going to be hearing from some of our stakeholders about transportation and the role of transportation in the work that they do across the state of Minnesota. So with that, I believe Senator Fischbach is here. We have Senate File 76. Welcome to the committee, Senator Fischbach. Welcome, Senator Fischbach, please.
Thank you so much, Mr. Chair. I really appreciate you hearing this bill so quickly and having the opportunity to be in front of the Transportation Committee this afternoon. I think the bill is pretty self-explanatory. It is it names a portion of Trunk Highway 23. I believe it's about a 10-mile stretch on Highway 23 in honor of a fallen officer from the Cold Spring Richmond Department. And I do have with me a few folks that do want to make some comments, but I think that it's self-explanatory, and I really appreciate the opportunity to be here today. And I will go ahead and introduce Chief of Police Phil Jones, and then I believe he'll introduce the other members.
Thank you, Senator Fischbach. Welcome to the committee, Chief.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Committee members, it's an honor to be here. We feel that we have a very important bill, very sentimental bill. Being a fiscal conservative, I could not support this bill any more. I think it is a fantastic idea. I see some great things. Number one, it memorializes with signage. That's all we're asking for is signage. Our exact jurisdiction, the jurisdiction of Highway 23 that Officer Tommy Decker patrolled for years. As you're aware, on November 29th at 22:45 hours, Tommy Decker was called to a welfare check, possible suicidal male. He exited his squad car and was immediately shot in the head and was dead on the scene. It's still a very emotional time for our department, but we strongly support this bill. We have a worst-case scenario of cost at $1,800, which is from the DOT, and that is if there's not any signposts near. We're not worried about cost. Please don't factor that in. Consider it. It means so much to us. We'll take care of the cost. Either the community or the officers from the police department will pay out of their pockets to get the signage. I also have brought along with me Tommy's brother. It's an older brother. His name is Eddie Decker. And Eddie does not wish to speak with you today. However, he wanted to come along to show how much it means to the Decker family. I see this signage as not only being just simple signage. It's a memorialization of a fallen officer in his own jurisdiction. It's a reminder to my officers every time they see it to think of safety. It's a reminder to deputies, state troopers, and any other emergency personnel who pass by, including firefighters. So I'm looking at it in a broad scope of public safety. So it would be my honor if Mr. Chair, committee, if you would vote yes on this measure, and it would furthermore be my honor that you move it straight to the floor for a passage and a bipartisan support for a show of support for public safety officials across the state of Minnesota. Thank you. If you have any more questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
Oh, thank you, Chief Jones. Any questions, members?
Excuse me, sir?
Oh, I'm sorry. I was just addressing to the committee, wondering if they had any questions for you. Thank you for your testimony. Senator Peterson?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I'd be ready to make a motion whenever you're ready to entertain that.
All right, very good. And I'll just mention that a quorum is present. Senator Fischbach.
Well, Mr. Chair, you know, we don't often have officers we lose in the line of duty in the state, and certainly this has been a tragedy for our area, for the community, for the family, for the department, and so this, I think, is something very simple that we can do in honor of Tommy Decker.
Thank you, Senator Fischbach. Chief Jones.
Mr. Chair, committee, I've made a fatal error. I forgot to introduce my mayor, Doug Schmitz.
Welcome to the committee, Mayor.
I think Mr. Mayor has just a few comments for you.
All right. Thank you, Mr.
Chair and committee members, thank you for allowing us to come here today. I just want to speak on behalf of the two communities that our police department represents. Both city administrators couldn't make it here today. They were at the House hearings last week, Tuesday, I believe it was. But just to reiterate the fact that both communities are very much in support of renaming this highway in honor of Officer Decker. So thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Senator Sendrum.
Mr. Chair, and to the officer or anybody, chief, I'm sorry. When I look at this, you know, I know from your uniform you're here talking about police officer Tom Decker. And my only question would be, and I'm not trying to rewrite your bill or anything like that, but just to ask if you've thought about it. In other words, designating as police officer Tom Decker, you know, if you're from Rochester driving up, it could be sheriff's officer, it could be military officer, it could be, did you think about that at all?
This is what it says.
And if you haven't, that's fine. It just, officer is fairly.
It says, Mr. Chair, committee.
Chief Jones.
It says a Officer Tom Decker Memorial Highway.
And my question, Mr. Chair, is just would the world generally know that was a police officer?
Officer or Chief Jones.
And you know, and we can just leave it. I just raised that question.
I thank you for your comments. I had not thought of that, but I honestly, I think the more simple, the better.
Maybe, Mr. Chair, maybe there would be something of a police nature on the rest of the sign that would indicate a police officer as opposed to just naming it police officer.
Mr. Chair, committee,
no.
I honor that suggestion that maybe the signage have a small badge or a badge. I think that's a fantastic idea.
Mr. Chair, I'll just leave it at there. You know,
Maybe is anyone here from MnDOT and can help us understand just very briefly how the design, it says in the language, the commissioner shall adopt a suitable design to mark this highway and erect appropriate signs. Is it possible to somehow indicate this is, well, Mr. Rudine.
Mr. Chair, for the record, I'm Eric Rudine with MnDOT Government Affairs. And designing the sign is something that we would begin working with sponsors after the legislation is enacted. However, including a badge or some sort of logo on the sign is not something that we would typically do. It's typically just a green sign with white lettering, and it's generally our goal to keep roadside signs as simple as possible so that people can understand them and not become distracted by them.
Thank you, Mr. Green. Any questions, members? Mr. Rudin? Thank you.
Mr. Chair, that was my original train of thought.
Mm-hmm.
See, our actual name is Cold Spring Richmond Police Department. It's rather lengthy, and you're heading down the road at 55, 65 mm-hmm. miles an hour. And although I appreciate the ideas, I actually like them. But we were trying to keep it just as tight as possible.
So. All right. Senator Westrum?
Mr. Chair, I think this would be something that would be an easy, simple amendment for the floor if the author and talking to the supporters and you, Mr. Chair, and other people, I think if that would be the case, rather than try to add something today that we in a day don't think we want, maybe just I would just offer my support for an easy amendment on the floor if something seems to pop into people's minds.
Thank you, Senator Westrum. All right, thank you, Mr. Rudin. Let me just say, Mayor, Chief, Mr. Decker, thank you for bringing this, and Senator Fischbach, thank you for bringing this bill and this minimal way that we can honor Officer Decker. I think the whole state joins you in sorrow. Officer Decker made the ultimate sacrifice for his community and for our state, and it's the bare minimum we can do. I appreciate the opportunity to support this bill and appreciate that you're bringing it forward. And I hope that we can do more. There's nothing we can say that can ease the sorrow. But we're lucky to have people like Officer Necker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Senator Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd move Senate File 76 straight to the Senate floor and be placed on general orders for immediate consideration.
Thank you. All in favor of Senator Peterson's motion, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, members. We really appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I would add that the state has stepped up to the plate in the form of the BCA and other government agencies. And through other tragic events I've had, that your employees have stepped up.
Great.
And do a great job.
So thank you, Chief. I appreciate your sharing that. Thank you. Members, we have another bill, Senate File 91, Senator Senjum. Welcome, Senator Senjum. Proceed.
Thank you,
Mr.
Pleasure. Chair and members. I'm here to talk today about Senate File 91, and prior to that, I would like to move the A1 Delete All Amendment.
Senator Senjum moves the A1 Delete All Amendment. I don't think it's in your packets. It'll come around. And Senator Senjum, you can begin describing.
Sure.
The bill under
Chair
the A1
members,
amendment.
The A1 amendment is a slight modification of the original bill to bring it in, to a level of acceptance with the MnDOT folks. And so they'll have to speak for themselves, but I think generally speaking, this language is part and parcel of some efforts that they put together to work with our reviser.
Great, thank you. Senator Senjum moves the A1 amendment. This is an author's amendment to put the bill in the form that he would like to present it at its Committee of Original Jurisdiction. All in favor of the A1 amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Amendment passes.
Thank you, members. And then the amended Senate File 91 is simply an effort, a bill that will suggest to the Commissioner of MnDOT that he or she would examine all of the real property owned by the state that has been derived over the years as a result of highway construction and decide whether or not that property, that what we'll call surplus property, may be suitable for sale. And then if it is, once identified, once deemed suitable, to take it through their procedural processes, which involve an opportunity for local governments to purchase it, past landowners to purchase it, and ultimately the public to purchase it, to go through those procedural processes, and then on a biannual basis, odd number of years, report to the individual transportation committees, House and Senate, what kind of progress they're making. There's a lot of may and flexibility to this in terms of deemed suitable. That will be up to MnDOT, but it just to move MnDOT along a little bit, suggest to MnDOT that there probably is a fair amount of property out there that has been accrued over the course of many, many years that may in fact be something that we could move on to the tax rolls and off the off public ownership. So with that, I would stand for questions. We have MnDOT officials here with me to assist where I'm not able to answer, where you may have a question specific to the agency.
Thank you, Senator Sindrum. Members, any questions? Senator Kiffmeyer.
Mr. Chairman and Senator Sindrum, just a quick question. How does this affect the fiscal note? I'm assuming it did.
Senator Sindrum.
Madam, Mr. Chair, Senator, I don't have a fiscal note on this. I would assume it's, well, certainly some degree. Was there one in the packet that I hadn't seen yet?
Senator Sindrum, yes, there is. Okay. There is one here. It shows that it has a cost of $420,000 from the Trunk Highway Fund. Ms. Boyd, do you want to help us? Thank you.
Mr. Chair and Senators, there is an initial cost for review of all existing right-of-way, and that's the initial cost of $420,000 you see in the first year, fiscal year 14. The original fiscal note had ongoing costs related to the reporting to the legislature of about $13,000 in even-numbered years. The amendment changes it to odd-numbered years. So I believe that $13,000 will be shifted to fiscal year 15 and 17.
Okay. Madam Chair, Senator Kiffmeyer, I look at that $420,000. I would tend to believe, since this does not, in fact, set a pace for MnDOT to act, that I would doubt a lot that they would spend $420,000 the first year doing this. I would expect much less. This is a gradual effort over time to take a look at existing properties that they may own, and I don't think they're going to do all this in 1 year, but they could testify better to that than I could.
Senator Reinert.
Thank you, Chair Kent. Senator, and you've got a lot more experience here than I do, do we have to tell MnDOT to look at their surplus property and do something with it?
Madam Chair, Senator Reinhart, maybe they should answer that one. But I think they will also tell you, though, that this is not amongst and has not been amongst, you know, their major priorities. They're in other business of highways and so on. And a highway gets constructed, property ownership kind of gets lost over time. And maybe I'll just leave it at that and let them answer.
And, Mr. Chair, before MnDOT does, you know, part of that's tongue-in-cheek, but I am really interested in sort of how the process of accumulating surplus property comes about, because speaking to the fiscal note, it seems to me a bit silly that we have a fiscal note for $400-some-thousand when really determining at the end of a project that we have this leftover property we don't need ought to be part of just sort of the project, and then at the end kind of tidying things up is we don't need this, let's move it on to somewhere else. But that maybe there's more to it than that, so.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Yes.
Eric Rudin, again, with MnDOT.
Thank you, Mr. Rudin.
First, I'll say that it's our goal to not acquire more property than we need to. And if we need a portion of property only for the duration of a project, we can do a temporary easement. So that would then expire when a project is completed. Senator Senjum indicated, though, we have not in the past been very proactive in going out and trying to get rid of excess right-of-way. Our focus really is on acquiring new right-of-way so that we can get projects delivered on time. Certainly, if somebody comes to us with a question about a specific parcel or piece of land that they're interested in acquiring, we will begin a process to evaluate whether that land is still needed for a transportation purpose. If it is not, then we're happy to get rid of it. We don't want to hold on to any more land than we.
Thank you, Mr. Rudin. Senator
Chair,
Peterson?
And members, I'm going to.
Senator Senjum.
I probably shouldn't sound like an expert here, but I'm going to believe that simply because of even some highway construction in my district, that there are irregular pieces of property here and there that might very well go back to the immediate property owner, be it a farmer to expand a cornfield or something like that, that might be available in many kinds of situations.
Thank you, Mr. Senator Senjum. Senator Peterson?
Thank you, Chair. And a question, I guess, I would respond on the fiscal note. You know, from my perspective, there's a couple advantages there. First, you know, the fiscal note isn't taking into effect the sale price, what type of revenue could be generated, and conceivably make that those expenses back. And then certainly it's not taking into effect the those properties going back on the property tax rolls unless another government agency, a city or a county or a township would buy those properties. Members, I think we'd expect these properties to begin paying property tax again and paying back into the system. And so a question I have is, are you in a position to be able to sell this property at a lower than appraised value? I mean, would you take it to a similar to a foreclosure auction where the best price gets it in an effort just to get these properties back on the tax rolls?
Mr. Dean?
Madam Chair, I think maybe Mr. Dodds could have a question.
Chair, I believe we have to, for cities and counties, we can convey the property to them for less.
And can I ask you to please state your name for the record?
Sorry, thank you. It's Brian Dodds with MnDOT. For cities and counties, we can convey it to them for less than fair market value, but when we sell it on the open market, we do need to sell it for fair market value.
So, Madam Chair, and so you would need a change in the law to allow you to sell them at a reduced rate to get them back on the property tax rolls as well?
Yes, I believe that's correct.
Okay, and the last question I have, Madam Chair, and I'm not sure who is best to pose this to, but it seems reasonable that when we do road construction and we're closing out the project, so to speak, and finalizing a new project, does the department have a process in place now to evaluate if you've purchased too much land and sell it right away before the project's closed out rather than allowing these properties to grow, you know, over time and over a period of several years? It seems that the project manager should be evaluating that when we do a new project and not allowing this to occur anymore. Is that reasonable?
Mr. Dodge?
Madam Chair, Senator, it seems like a reasonable request. And, you know, as Mr. Rudin stated earlier, we do spend a lot, we work hard not to acquire more than we need. Occasionally we do have some uneconomic remnants that we call them, you know, small pieces of land. Occasionally there's something we call excess property. And again, it's not a high priority to get rid of. We do, you know, in our discussions with cities and others, you know, let them know that there is this out there, but we don't actively seek to get rid of it.
Thank you, Mr. Dodds.
So, Madam Chair, so I guess I'm understanding. I think what I just heard is that it's too much of a hassle at the end of the project to evaluate if we bought the right amount of land. And I'm not trying to be short or facetious or anything, but it just seems when we're finishing up a project, that before that project is closed out, it seems reasonable to evaluate if we purchase too much land, and certainly maybe it puts the project manager on the spot, or whoever managed the project, to have to admit that they purchased too much right-of-way. But it seems it would be easier to sell at that time rather than just moving on and letting it grow on a huge, I guess we actually haven't seen a list, but adding to a list of properties that that aren't paying property tax and aren't really usable for anybody. So would you have to change the, would there have to be a change in the law again to ask your project managers to do this land inventory at the end of a project rather than let it go into this land bank?
Mr. Dodds?
Madam Chair and Senator, no, it would not take a change in law. We can do that today.
Okay, thank you.
Senator Franzen?
Thank you, Madam Chair. At any given time, how much excess property are we talking about on average? How much are on the books right now or on any given time in a year? Do you have an average, or does that vary drastically in months and during the year?
Mr. Dodds?
Madam Chair, Senator. Part of the purpose of this legislation is to analyze that list. We haven't gone around, looked statewide to see what the parcels are that we have that could be analyzed as surplus. We kind of have a kind of an ongoing list of low-hanging fruit that may, you know, the larger parcels, they may be able to be sold for a significant amount of cash, you know, that people may be interested in. And we have those lists, and we work on those, but we don't have a running list statewide on what the parcels are that are surplus at this time.
I have a follow-up question.
Senator Franzen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. How long do you typically hold property? Do you have a set process? I'm trying to understand why this bill is necessary, which I'm getting to with what your response, but is there not a regular process in place and a timeline of how much time would that MnDOT would ideally best practices hold property for, excess property for?
Madam Chair and Senator, I don't think there's any guidelines right now on those. Again, the standard practice is not to acquire any more than we need for a project. So the typical project out there, we don't have more than we need, but as you go through time, alignments slightly change. Some of your, just the evolution of things, you'll get some excess property over time.
Senator Peterson?
Madam Chair, do you have an example of when the DOT had sold property back to a buyer in recent years at all? Do you have an example that you could share with us that we might be talking about?
Madam Chair, Senator, I don't have any specific ones that I can cite off the top of my head, but we could get that for you.
Thank you. Senator Jensen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Senjum, I have a question regarding the surplus and land that you haven't used for state highway purposes for a period of 5 years. In the fiscal note, it indicates that there might be some problems with purchasing right-of-ways well in advance of planned construction. Do you see, am I understanding this correctly, that if it's sitting there for over 5 years, whether or not they've been able to get to the project, or, you know, how much in advance do you buy the land before you actually start the project, and will that cause a problem for right-of-way purchases that far in advance?
Madam Chair, Senator, I think that's taken care of in line 1.7. It's got to be suitable for sale. I think you're probably thinking along the lines of pre-purchases, and in my estimation, at least listening to your question, if something's purchased ahead of time for the use on an ultimate highway, I don't think that would be suitable for sale. So I think it's covered on line 7 of the bill.
Okay, thank you. Any further questions? Any further discussion?
Madam Chair.
Yes, Senator Carlson.
Madam Chair, and I'm not sure who can answer this, but it seems to me, and connected with Senator Peterson's question, that there may be more property that is off the tax rolls or maybe even impaired by easements. In my case, one of my constituents has a piece of property that is pretty substantial, And because it has an easement on most of it, it is on the tax rolls of a value of $200. And there's $3.63 worth of property tax per year being paid on it. And what he told me is that people have offered, and this was an inheritance, people have offered them seven figures to buy the property. And at this point, it's still encumbered by that easement. And it's been an easement that's been a legacy one for many, many years. And you know, and I didn't realize quite so much how much that had to do with this particular bill or issue until Senator Peterson brought it up, that this is a piece of property that could yield an awful lot of property tax if it was appropriately sold, or you know, vacate the easement, sell it, and then these people can handle it in with whatever they want to do with it. So I'm interested in how much property might be available like that. And like Senator Peterson said, maybe there's some way to recoup some of this value by getting it back on the tax roll and also selling it. And that made me ask, do the proceeds of these kinds of sales go to the owner, which might be MnDOT, or does it go to the state? How is that money handled?
Mr. Radin?
Madam Chair and Senator Carlson, the proceeds from the sale would go into the Trunk Highway Fund, so they would be available in future years for the legislature to appropriate to MnDOT for highway purposes.
Okay. Thank you.
Just to clarify, too, one thing. The bill, as it is currently written, would apply only to property that MnDOT controls in fee and not to easements. However, I think the same thing that we said earlier about us not wanting to be responsible for land that is no longer needed for highway purpose, if there's a situation where we have an easement, we'd be happy to get rid of that as well if it's not needed for a transportation purpose any longer.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Radin. Senator Pratt.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I guess a question on the fiscal note, why the assumption that none of the expense could be absorbed in the current agency? I'll leave it open to whoever.
Madam Chair and Senators, I think I would throw that question to MnDOT, actually, who prepared the fiscal note.
Madam Chair and Senator Pratt, there is no appropriation in the bill, and so we would be absorbing the cost within our current budget.
Senator Pratt.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So the assumption is the fiscal note isn't necessarily incremental cost. It is absorbed in your current budget.
Mr. Radin?
Madam Chair, that's correct. We would, we would probably have to reallocate some resources internally because this would be an unexpected expense for the department. But
okay. Thank you.
Okay. Any further questions or discussion?
Madam Chair, to that point, and
yes, Senator Sanchez.
I would believe overall, I mean, there would be an overall net positive for the state of Minnesota. There may be some expenses within the department, but I think reasonably speaking, there would be also a fair amount of money that would accrue to the state of Minnesota into the Trunk Highway Fund if we were to do this.
Thank you, Senator Sanchez. Would you like to make a motion with regarding to the
Madam Chair, and we haven't rehearsed this, but I think I would like to move adoption of the bill, and that for positive inclusion into the omnibus bill, should we have one. If we don't, I will make a request at some future date that we pull it and deal with it individually. But
would you like to move that it be sent to finance as well?
If that is the appropriate body, Madam Chair, I would move the bill be adopted with a recommendation to pass and referred to finance.
Thank you, Senator Sanchez. As amended,
yes.
Correct? Yes. Then all those in favor of moving this forward to finance, please say aye.
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 All opposed? The motion, the bill moves to finance. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members.
And next on our agenda will be a presentation from the MnDOT State Aid Division. We have Julie Skallman, Director. And Mr. Dean, are you staying with us? Thank you.
Madam Chair.
Ms. Skallman, will you please introduce yourself for the record?
Yes, my name is Julie Skallman. I am the MnDOT State Aid Engineer. And I thank you for the opportunity to talk about state aid. It is my passion. I get so excited I forget to flip the slides. The purpose of the state aid system is to provide resources that assist the local counties and cities in construction and maintenance of the state aid system. Our intent is to provide safe highways and streets that are on the secondary system that feed to the trunk highway system, to provide mobility and structural capacity, and to provide an integrated network that supports the secondary road system as well as the overall system in Minnesota. The next slide is just a really quick snapshot to show you how we're organized. On the left side of the slide, there is a central office. Those are the people that directly report to me. They're divided. They're a group of people that determine what is the fair share for each of the 87 counties and the 142 cities which share in the funds. There are people who review project documents and plans and approve them. And then we have, at times, special issues that are kind of hot buttons for counties and cities at the time. Right now, it's the traffic safety, it's the wetlands, and it's construction practices. But those kind of switch over time depending on what is the current issue. The map in the middle just shows that we do have a state aid engineer in each one of the MnDOT districts. They are sort of the first call for help from the county and city engineers that are located outstate. And then on the right side, there are a few more offices that are actually within MnDOT, but that my budget, the state aid funds that you give me, actually pay for some expertise in those individual offices. They're housed in the bridge office with the rest of the bridge experts, but they are paid by state aid funds and specifically work on local bridges or local issues. And that is also finance, cultural resources, materials. There are specialists. State aid operations, this is just sort of to tell you how we decide what we do. We are set up in the statute. It was a past legislature who said there needs to be a state aid system. They also told us that there need to be state aid rules. We need to govern our operations through the rulemaking process, and so that is Chapter 8820. And in that, they also told us that we need to have standards for what state aid roads look like, and so they are defined in those rules. Current topic, which you may have heard about, and I know the chair of this committee is interested in, is complete streets. That's currently one of our issues that we're talking about. And in addition to that, we have natural preservation routes and forest highways. The system is not just urban. It is very rural. In fact, when you get to forest highways, it's about as rural as you can possibly get. You're lucky if you see a car out there. In the law, you also set up a variance process. Because they are set up in rules and have the force and effect of law, we also have to have a way to give a city or a county an exemption from those rules, and there is a variance process that is their peers look at their requests. And then in addition to that, we do manage the federal aid projects that go to local agencies. So if there is a local county or city using some federal funds, my office works with them on that. So then now just a reminder, what is included in the state aid, the state aid system? What is it that the state gas tax and license fees supports? They're at the trunk highway system, and when you're talking about MnDOT, that's usually what you're talking about. It's those 11 or 12,000 miles on the trunk highways. But in addition to that, it's the CASA, or County State Aid Highway System, and that's shared by all 87 counties have a piece of that. There are municipal state aid streets. You might count, some people say MSAS or MSAS. There are 142 cities with a population over 5,000. So it's not every city in the state. It's just those that have 5,000 or more people. And then there is that small amount of town road and bridge. There's 140,000 miles of township roads that share $20 million. So each individual mile gets maybe $1,000. But to them, it's very important. to give you a visual of what that looks like, this picture is the 11,500 miles of trunk highways. That's what you think of when you're talking about the trunk highway system and kind of those heavily traveled routes. If you click once more, this is now adding the state aid system. They're the pink miles. These are the miles that I deal with are what has been added in addition. There's 30,000 miles on the county state aid system and about 3,500 miles in the municipal state aid system. This is what the gas tax is going to fund. But then you click all of the miles that are within the state, and you can see why roads are such a big deal to Minnesota. There are corners of it where it looks like we don't have anything left but roads. And that's adding all of those township miles, the forest roads, the private roads, just pretty much anything that the public can travel on somehow is depicted here. The funding, and this is where you take a big say into this. The 95% of the highway user fund is divided 62-29-9. 62% of the money goes to the trunk highway fund. That's what you were talking about just before this, and that funds those 11,000 miles. Today, I'm talking about the 29% that goes to the county state aid highway funds and is shared by the 87 counties, and I'm also talking about the 9% of that, which goes to the cities with populations over 5,000. There's that little teeny bit, and that's constitutionally decided that it goes to those funds. But when they set that up, they did put 5% aside, it's called, and a piece of it now goes to the town road account. That was what I said was $20 million that's shared by all the townships. There's some that goes to the town bridge account, which replaces deficient township bridges. And then there is the flexible highway fund, which is what is used for former trunk highways that have now become a county or a city state aid route. That is the piece that you can affect because the legislature decides how that 5% is set. They can do it every 6 years as to fit whatever the current needs are. You've seen this chart, I'm sure, in every presentation that MnDOT has come to do the budget. It's just to show you that what I'm talking about is there's a gas tax, tab fees, motor vehicle, sales tax, all goes into the highway user fund, and then that's the distribution that I just talked about. The 29% of CASA funds, again, it is the legislature who has determined that they will be shared by the individual counties in a 50% needs, and that's the cost to bring the county state aid system up to the current standard, 30% by the lane miles that are in that individual county, 10% based on how many vehicles are in that county, and that's sort of a proxy for population, how many cars are using the road. It's recognizes that you have to take care of it. And then there's 10% equalization. When the legislature set this up, they did acknowledge that if you're going to give people money and you're going to make them responsible for roads, they need to have a county engineer and a reasonable staff to take care of that system. And that 10% is in there to make sure that no county can say they cannot afford to have a staff. The 10% pays for that piece of it. Although I would admit that most of them add some additional dollars to take care of it as well. And then in 2008, when you did approve a gas tax increase, that new money was divided by a different formula. It was 60% needs and 40% vehicle registration. What that did was send a little bit more of that increased money into the growing and metropolitan areas, so the St. Cloud, Rochester, and the metropolitan area here got a little bit greater share of it. And in 2013, that's approximately $483 million that we distribute to the counties. They get 40% of it for maintenance, and we send them checks for that. We give them a check in February and another one in July, and that is they know what they need to do with it. It's for snow plowing, it's for patching, it's for mowing on the sides of it. They are required to send me a report each year that shows how they use that money, so there is some oversight. We don't just give them a check and they can spend it on anything. They have to spend it on their state aid system. But again, most of them would tell you that they do put additional local dollars into maintenance of the state aid system as well. And that 60% is set aside for construction, and they actually have to design a project, send us a plan. We review it to make sure that it matches the rules and standards that are in the laws. And if that's the case, we say go ahead and let it, and then we just send them their money. We give them 95% and give them the last 5% when the project is done. I don't actually give them the whole 483 million unless you tell me I cannot no longer get my administrative account funds. But in the MnDOT budget, you will see that there are certain deductions that come off the top of the 483. One of them is $10 million or so of admin money, which manages all of the people within MnDOT who work on the county or city system. But in addition to that, we use it for statewide projects. If we need to do one of the recent things is a pavement rating van that goes to every county and reviews all their paved roads. That was something that we purchased out of that admin account because it benefits the entire state. There is a disaster account. Some years we don't use that. Last year with the disaster in Duluth and St. Louis County, Carlton County, we took those disaster funds down to zero. There is a research account that does only research on local roads. And then there is a small part of State Park Road account, which goes to the DNR. They tell us what projects they want to do, and we fund them. Similar thing for the municipal state aid street funds. It's a little bit simpler in that 50% is needs, cost to bring their system up to standard, and 50% by population. About half of the cities that qualify are in the metropolitan area. The other half are spread out statewide, but they have a population of 5,000. And for them, it's about $149 million. How we divide the money might be simple, but the maintenance and construction split is a little different. The law allows them to tell us how much they want for maintenance up to 35%. So we have some cities at 15 and some at 35%, and it's totally up to their city council to decide how they want to structure their money as long as they don't go over the 35. And then the remainder, either 65 to 85%, is set aside for construction. Same rules apply. They have to meet standards, and I have to review the plan. Same thing. This chart just demonstrates that there is admin account. There is also a city disaster account and a research account. And then I mentioned that there was that 5%. Just to give you a feel for how much money is in the 5% rather than the 95, there's $89 million in 2013, and that goes into the three accounts, 14 for township bridges, 27 for town roads, and then the turnback accounts has $48 million. And I can't sit down without stressing how wonderful the state aid system was set up. Your predecessors were really thinking. It is governed by the counties and cities. My only role is to make sure that the rules and standards that they set for themselves, that they all follow it. It is a rules committee who determines what the standards are. They actually go through and they decide how are they going to govern each other. And so the commissioner adopts the rules, but he adopts what the counties and cities set for themselves. The screening board is also set up in law, and that is a county engineer group and a city engineer group that determine how is the fair share that the needs should be calculated. And then, as I mentioned before, it's the variance committee. It's a setup of their peers. It's elected officials and county engineers who listen to a county or a city say, I can't meet the standard or do it this way, and they then decide, yes, this one should be given an exemption to it. And so it's totally self-governed. It works wonderful, and that way, if the world is changing, they are in a position to change the rules of operation. At that point, I would just sit for questions if there's any.
Thank you, Ms. Gallman. Questions? Senator Kiffmeyer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just have a question. Are the screening boards local, one in each county? Is this a state, the screening board's rules and variance, is that a state-level entity? And then I had another question.
Ms. Gallman?
Okay, Madam Chair, Senator Kiffmeyer. The screening board is a statewide organization, one representative from each construction district, so that's the Duluth area selects one engineer, and then Bemidji. So there are eight plus on the city side. The first class cities also have a permanent rep on this, so Duluth, Rochester, St. Paul, and Minneapolis are also represented. And so they are responsible for making a statewide decision that affects everyone. On the county side, it is one from each one of the construction districts, so that's eight of them, because the East and West Metro each get a representative. And then the urban counties, a county that has over 175,000. So that adds St. Louis, Anoka, Washington, Hennepin, Ramsey, and Dakota. We anticipate the next one to come on will probably be Olmsted. They're going to get over that mark. And again, they are making a decision for the statewide good. And again, I would say it works very well. I know there are people out there who say, oh, well, you know, the metropolitan ones are going to vote against the rural ones. It does not work that way. They all are very good at putting on their statewide hat, just like you guys do, and make a decision for the good of the whole.
Senator Kiffmeyer? No. Are we good at that? Putting on our statewide hat?
We try, right?
I think we are. All right.
Senator Kiffmeyer?
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. So is that true for, there's three boards, there's screening boards, rules committee, and variance committee. Is that true for all three of them? Are they the same group of people or different group of people?
Madam Chair, Senator Kiffmeyer, they are different people. There are some people offer to serve on more than one of them, but the rules committee turns over. They are appointed by the League of Minnesota Cities and the Association of Minnesota Counties. They're the ones who give me the elected official names, and we put them on. We only do rulemaking probably every third year or so, so they don't serve too long, although we have some people who have been on for multiple terms. The variance committee is made up, again, of people who are nominated by the League and the Association of Counties, and we call them on an as-needed basis. We have variance committee meetings four times a year, and five members serve at any one time. We have a list. We just call until we get it, but we always make sure we have an elected city official, an elected county official, and an engineer of each type, and then we try to err on the side of getting one more elected official. They're very busy, though. Sometimes we have to go with a third engineer.
Madam Chair, I think doing with an engineer instead of an elected official, unless they're an engineer, is maybe can work out quite well for you. I think the issue that I have is I know that in the past doing things that way, but I have experienced, though, that the perspective of the medium-sized or small counties at least to have their voice. Is there any sort of way, and this would be my last question, is there any sort of way for medium-sized small counties to give their input or have input into that process? Because I just think sometimes there's a mindset of a large county that for them to try and think about a medium-sized or small, they just don't have that experience. So, but is there some other way for input to happen?
Ms. Gallman?
Madam Chair, when we do rulemaking, we do have very public, open process. Anybody who wants to comment on any of them can, and we go through an administrative law judge, and they have everyone has an opportunity. For the screening board itself, we go out and have an individual meeting with every district, and so it is the county engineers in the northwest corner who pick their representative that they want to have. They fully discuss it between them, and then that person is responsible for voicing that opinion at the screening board meeting.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Senator Osmek.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ms. Skolman, there's some legislation perhaps being percolated around changing the threshold from 5,000 residents in a jurisdiction down to 2,500 for the purposes of municipal state aid. Do you have any thoughts to that, reasons why it would be good, bad, otherwise? What would the impacts be on the existing group of cities that are within that? I'm assuming it would have a rather negative effect. Or lastly, and sort of in combination with all of these factors, how much more money would be needed if we added down to 2,500 in order to not hurt the cities that exist within the current program?
Ms. Gallman?
I would have to go back and look at how much each person is worth to actually give you how much more money you would need. We would have to discuss, I guess, the issue about the 5,000 limit is in Constitution. And so I would have to be told that that is, in fact, that we could give this money to cities between 2,500 and 5,000. That's not a call I can make. But we have at times calculated what is the share of the county state aid formula that is calculated in those small cities, and some of them come out ahead because they would get more having it go to their county and then the county giving them the money to do the project than they would if they were a small city of 2,500 people. Some of our small cities at 5,000 are getting, you know, $250,000 a year, and if they want to do a project, they may get it from their county easier than they would have to save up to actually build something. So just all thoughts that would have to be taken into account if you decide to go that way.
Thank you, Ms. Gallman. Senator Reinert.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Early in the session, from Duluth, early in the session, my mayor came to me with some sense of panic that the formula for determining MSA amounts was being changed internally, and I wondered if you just wanted to comment on that or if that's a conversation we need to have when we have more time.
I can try, and we may need to have more time. When I talked about the screening board, that is the organization that determines how the needs will be divided. They currently have a needs study task force that is recalculating and coming with a proposal on how to make it different. What it's doing is saying, you know, what we decided 50 years ago when no roads had been rebuilt, we're starting fresh, is no longer valid. What people are doing today are not building new roads, but rather are reconditioning and rehabilitating. And so they have been working for 3 years, and this is one of those statewide committees with representatives from all over the state. They are working on this system, and we have started trying to redo the software system to be able to reflect whatever they finally decide. Duluth is in a panic because what we have done is run so far, shows them with a significant drop, but they are not done by any means, and the screening board has not yet taken any final vote or decision that this is it and it's the end. Well, they are well aware, and I know Duluth is coming down to visit with them at their meeting next week.
Senator Reinert.
Follow-up, Madam Chair, and Mr. Chair, Senator Dibble. Hopefully when the time comes that we'll come back to this committee so we can have some input on it. You know, when you have a city built on clay and rock and 15% slope, streets need attention. So the MSA funds are critical, not only for our community but for others. So if there's going to be a change, I know we don't have direct legislative oversight over that, but I would hope that we would have an appearance before this committee and we'd have a chance to talk about it.
Thanks, and Senator Ryan, we also have city representatives here today who perhaps can speak to the subject.
Senator Tomasoni.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The CASAP formula that you have here, the 29% slide, are those both funding formulas, or is the first bullet point the old formula and the one below is a new formula? Or?
Is this the chart?
That's the one, yeah. What's the excess sum, 2008 okay. Excess sum?
Excuse me, Madam Chair. The excess sum is the 8.5 cents that was approved in 2008. So that is how that 8.5 cents is divided. The original 20 cents of gas tax and license fees is on the top of that.
So it's two different ways of dividing it. Okay. All right.
Senator Pratt.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Director. I was interested in your brief conversation on flexible funding and turnback accounts, the $48 million down in my area, Scott County. This has been a timely topic. Do you know or would you have access to information that would say that, do we have a backlog in that account? And would you know about how big that backlog is?
Madam Chair, Senator Pratt, yes, we have a backlog. I don't know off the top of my head. I think in has to be divided about 50% metro area, 50% outstate. I think outstate our backlog is about 5 years worth of projects that we're waiting for their 25 million share. In the metropolitan area, I think we're programmed out beyond 2020. there are that many projects that MnDOT has turned back, and the counties have been very patient with us and are waiting, but there are additional roads out there that MnDOT would love to turn back to a local agency. Many of them are willing takers of it, but we're telling them without additional money in a turnback account, we can't commit to funding even a rehabilitation project for you for maybe 10 years from now.
Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Gallman. Any further questions? Thank you for the very helpful presentation.
Thank you.
Next, we'll have a presentation on township transportation. Rob Vanasek from Minnesota Association of Townships. And Kent Sulem, General Counsel from the Minnesota Association of Townships.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Rob Vanasek here on behalf of the Minnesota Association of Townships. I'll give you a little break from the PowerPoints this afternoon. And with me is Kent Sulem, who is our General Counsel. There are, for some folks may not know, there are 1,785 towns in the state of Minnesota with a population of about almost a million people, representing about 17.5% of the state's population. In 2011, the total township in expenditures statewide was about $264 million. According to MnDOT's 2012 Highway User Tax Distribution Fund numbers, townships are responsible for 55,000 miles of roads, more than counties in the state combined, and 6,000 bridges. Of those bridges, 419 have been identified as deficient and require replacements within the next 5 years, at an estimated cost of $87.7 million. Road and bridge expenses are the number one cost for townships in providing services to their residents. Increased funding is needed to meet increased demands on our system from increased traffic volume, truck weights, the increased just general repair and replacement of existing deteriorating system, as well as new road miles when necessary. The Minnesota Association Townships supports an increase to the state excise tax on motor fuels to ensure adequate funding to the Highway User Tax Distribution Fund. We also support prioritization of bonding in the capital investment bill for local roads and bridges. We appreciate Senator Peterson, Senator Chair Dibble, Senator Reinhart, and Senator Senjum for co-sponsoring Senator Tomasoni's bill for $20 million in bonding for local bridges and an additional $64 million for the Routes Regional Significance Program for a supplemental bonding bill for this construction season. In 2011, 11% of Minnesota's bridges were rated as structurally deficient or functionally obsolete. When structurally deficient, the bridge at a minimum is posted down for lower and for lower weight limits, and sometimes they're closed. In rural Minnesota, this sometimes requires farm equipment and school buses and emergency vehicles to travel very far on long detours. The length of travel times can be have a negative impact on the local economy. And in recent years, many of the newer farm implements are manufactured so wide that even in their most compact form, they're unable to cross many older, functionally obsolete bridges. As members have heard and will hear again and again, our rural roads have a traffic fatality rate three times that of other roads and highways in the state. Townships have, thanks to this body, had assistance improving road conditions via upgrades to signage and to railroad crossings, but many safety challenges still remain. From the most recent audit on town finances by the state auditor, Townships are spending 25% more on roads and bridges than they were just 5 years ago. In aggregate, statewide towns spend 58.2% of their total expenditures on roads and bridges. And we've gone from being 58% property tax reliant in 2002 to 73% property tax reliant in 2011. As you know, many of you, townships are fairly frugal entities, and the residents vote on their own tax levy at the March annual meeting. The buying power from the Highway User Tax Distribution Fund is not keeping up with growing maintenance costs, and we've seen a bump up in the amount of bridges that are going on the state master bridge replacement priority list. In 2013 alone, on that list, we'll see 248 bridges that will require a little over $50 million to complete, and compared to last year, we're only able to replace 80 bridges on the priority list at a cost of about $16.7 million. Association was happy to hear the governor speak about the need for state investment in our transportation system during the State of the State address last week. And while we don't oppose the governor's budget request for transit in the metro area, as it is paid for by folks in the metro area, we do support a comprehensive transportation package that includes funding for roads and bridges. We look forward to working with this committee and each of the members on it, and ask that you help us invest in a core government function, improving the transportation infrastructure in our great state. Thank you, Madam Chair and members. Happy to answer questions.
Thank you, Mr. Vanasek. Senator Dibble.
Oh, Madam Chair, was Mr. Solomon going to testify? I didn't mean to jump in.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Ken Sulem with the Minnesota Association of Townships, and I'm just here to help answer any questions. Mr. Vanasek did a great job covering our highlights.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Sulem. Senator Dibble.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Vanasek, something you said pricked up my ears. Can you talk again about the migration to the property tax for your roads and bridge purposes?
The most recent numbers are from 2007 to 2011, I believe, and that was increased about 25% more that we've been spending on roads and bridges. But from 2002, to your point, to most recent numbers from the state auditor, 2011, we went from 58%. I think it was 0.6% property tax reliance to 73% property tax reliance. Basically, we're spending our money on gravel, fuel, equipment, and the buying power. We're just not getting this state dollars aren't keeping up in relation to what our expenses are.
Madam Chair.
Mr. Sula.
Well, if I may add to that, that same audit report will show that our other expenditures held even or even maybe slightly declined. It is clearly road and bridges that are driving the township increase. And at that, while we don't have data, I want to be very honest, we don't have any way of accumulating specific data. Anecdotally, we are constantly hearing from our townships that even though they're having to spend more, they're still having to cut back on the amount of grading or the number of chloride has almost become a optional by resident request type thing. We'll pay for it if you'll do the dust control on our road. Even though we are having to spend more and more, the quality and quantity of the, not the quality of the work, but the frequency of the work is having to be carefully constrained because of the budget constraints we have with that property tax reliance.
Thank you, Mr. Sillen.
I'm sure.
Senator Dibble.
I just want to understand just a little bit better, and I think I heard, but it's more of a clarification. Is this from the declining purchasing power of the resources, the gas tax that comes from the state, or is it because the conditions of the roads are such, you know, and we've heard before some testimony that at one time, you know, we built a lot of roads and they're kind of coming to the same point in their age where the needs are accumulating rather quickly at this moment in time, 30, 40 years later. Is it both of those factors working in tandem? Is it, you know, is it the nature of industry and agricultural industry in greater Minnesota, larger equipment, heavier loads?
Madam Chair.
Mr. Sewell.
Mr. Dibble, I think you struck in all of it. It's the grand combination. The fact that we've got aging infrastructure, it's infrastructure that, while aging, is taking on more and more load in terms of heavier vehicles, wider vehicles, increased recreational vehicles. One of the most frequent calls I get at the office is the damage done by ATVs in the rural areas. We like to invite metro area members to have fun in our rural areas. Unfortunately, not everybody is as responsible as everyone else, and a handful of bad apples can do a great deal of damage. And so just a number of increase in the type and changes of use combined with the aging infrastructure and the lesser purchasing power. The price of gravel has gone up. The price, we don't have a great amount of paved roads, but those are that do. The asphalt rates went up dramatically a couple of years ago as the price of oil skyrocketed. It's a combination of all those factors.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Sewell. Senator Kiffmeyer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Vanosik, you quoted a statistic about traffic fatalities that are 3 times higher. Could you repeat that information again and give a little bit more about that's a pretty serious statistic, and fatalities are not the same as just injuries. So could you repeat that and then give a little more information?
I might have to dig a little bit, but the that's on all rural roads that are not non-interstate. So rural non-interstate roads have a triple the fatality rate than all other roads.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think that demonstrates that the importance of this, because I think especially fatalities. I know we work hard in some of our other highway things, but with 55,000 miles of township roads, clearly that's an issue.
Thank you, Senator Kiffmeyer. Any further questions? Thank you, gentlemen. Appreciate it. And next we have the presentation on municipal transportation. And with us we have Ann Finn from the League of Minnesota Cities and Todd Olson from Metro Cities. Thank you.
Madam Chair and members, my name is Ann Finn, and I represent the League of Minnesota Cities. And on behalf of our members, I want to thank you for having this hearing. I also wanted to mention before I really get into my presentation that we collaborate a lot with the other stakeholders that are coming before you today. We very much appreciate the work of the State Aid Office at MnDOT. We work closely with the townships and the counties to make sure that the system really does work. And we all get together on a pretty regular basis to talk about how we can advance legislation that helps all of us. I want to start by just telling you a couple things about the League of Minnesota Cities and our member cities, and then I'll talk about local transportation infrastructure. Briefly about the League, we are a statewide organization, and we represent 832 out of Minnesota's 853 cities. Our smallest member is the city of Funkley, Minnesota, which has a population of 5 and is in Beltrami County. And our largest member, of course, is the city of Minneapolis with a population over 382,000. We generally serve all cities, even though some are not members. When they call us, we try and be as helpful as we can. We provide, in addition to advocacy, we conduct a lot of research. We provide education and training for our members. We give them legal advice, and we help them manage risk. And then finally, we also operate an insurance trust for cities. Here's just a snapshot of Minnesota cities, the kinds of cities that make up our state. 139 cities are in the metropolitan, 7-county metropolitan area. And of the remaining 714 cities that are outside the 7-county area, only 36 have a population over 10,000. Statewide, 352 cities have a population of less than 500 people. And 500 cities, so well over half of the cities in our state, have a population under 1,000. I shared that information with you to help convey that Minnesota cities are very diverse, and it's sometimes difficult to make generalizations about them because they all operate so differently and have different needs and are unique in their own way. But I'll try to speak in general terms. I'm going to gloss over airports a little bit, even though they are an important component of our local transportation infrastructure. I want to spend the bulk of my time on streets and bridges. And then Todd Olson from Metro Cities, sitting next to me, will give you some information about transit at the local level. So starting with airports. There are 135 publicly owned airports in Minnesota. That may surprise some people. Only 7 of those are in the metropolitan area, with Minneapolis, St. Paul, International Airport, and 6 relievers. The other 128 are in greater Minnesota, and by and large, they are operated by cities. There are also some other situations out there, like city-county partnerships, airport authorities, and some of our airports exist in townships. Our airports are funded with revenues from the State Airports Fund, and that is funded with a dedicated tax, with dedicated taxes from aviation fuel, aircraft registration, and airline flight property taxes. The State Airports Fund is managed by the Minnesota Department of Transportation, and there are also some federal funds that come through to us depending on eligibility of various cities and then and the kind of airport they're operating, and then also by federal action. And this has been a source of frustration for cities that own airports. To help balance the general fund budget in 2003, the legislature transferred $15 million from the State Airports Fund to the general fund. It was repaid in 2008, but then taken again in 2009. So right now, the state is statutorily required to repay the $15 million, but that's only after they finish repaying the school districts. And so needless to say, we are hoping that that money will eventually be transferred back, because it really does go a long way, especially with some of these small airports. I'll spend the remainder of my time today on something that's common to all cities, and that is city streets. Cities are responsible for the roads under their jurisdiction. So what does that look like? Municipal streets make up about 14% of roadways in Minnesota. And by talking about these roadways, we're talking about the street in front of your house, the system that gets you from your front door to the county roads and state highways. The quality and design of these streets has a significant impact not only on drivers, but also on transit users and pedestrians. Absolutely critical to attracting and retaining businesses to support the state and local economies. Our biggest challenge when it comes to this system is maintenance. We know from what we've heard from our city engineers that for every $1 we invest in maintenance, and that means things like seal coating, we save $7 in repairs and reconstruction. Here's another way to explain this importance of maintenance. You can see here that right on the right-hand corner, at about 10 years in, if you don't start investing those smaller dollars, the system immediately starts to plunge into disrepair. And when you have to make those repairs, the price is a lot steeper. It usually means that you're dealing with potholes and other things that really actually have disturbed that infrastructure. It costs a lot more money.
So, Madam Chair.
Senator Dibble.
Thanks, Madam Chair. We can draw that same graph for the state-owned and the county-owned roads.
Thank you.
Absolutely. I think that's just a phenomenal chart. I mean, it really does paint the picture of what happens out there, and you can apply the same thing to your own house. You know, if you're not going to fix your roof on time, well, you're going to have problems inside too. So let's talk briefly about new construction. Some cities are engaged in new construction, and that's primarily due to growth or to attract economic investments. The cost there, the rule of thumb is that it's about $1 million per mile, and that's not including the acquisition of right-of-way. The city street system is divided into two systems. You've heard from MnDOT about the municipal state aid system, but then there's also a city street system that cities are responsible for. This is just a different version of what Ms. Skullman showed you earlier. You see that you'll see this chart over and over as you study transportation, and sadly, I end up finding myself talking about this in social situations, and it's kind of boring. But it really does. It really is important to understand where our state aid monies come from, and that this is a portion of the dedicated tax revenue from the Highway User Tax Distribution Fund, and that 9% right there is about $149 million. The red triangle that you see there. So who gets 9% of the 95%? And this is very important to cities. While all counties receive county state aid for their roads, only cities with a population over 5,000 get municipal state aid. And I know you've heard this already today, but it seems like a place where we get hung up a lot because people don't remember this. So cities over 5,000, and they can use it on up to 20% of their streets. So right now, 147 cities out of 853 get municipal state aid, and they can use it on up to 20% of their streets. Municipal state aid streets have specifications, and they must meet the state requirements that Ms. Skullman talked about earlier. So municipal state aid is not getting the job done for cities. Most cities, as you heard, are not eligible. And in municipal state aid cities, we're hearing that a lot of the funds are being exhausted by cost participation in state and county projects because that's one eligible use for state aid. So if, for example, there's an interchange that happens or a change to a state or county road, there oftentimes is a substantial portion of that that's borne by the city. And if they're a state aid city, they'll put their state aid dollars toward those projects, and then they'll fund the state aid system with property taxes. The other problem is that more cities are becoming eligible. While it's not, the cities aren't growing at a huge rate right now, every time a new city comes onto the state aid system, that 9% pie gets cut into more pieces. So that was the municipal state aid system. The bulk of the municipal system is actually made up of non-state aid streets. 84% of the streets under city jurisdiction are not on any system except the local government system. They're funded with property taxes, local government aid, and special assessments. Now, in some cases, cities get assistance from the county, or they use developer fees if they can negotiate that with somebody who's trying to locate a development there. The challenges with keeping up with that 84% of the system in cities is that, frankly, city budgets are constrained. Special assessments have become very unpopular and very difficult to administer. If you've ever had to pay a special assessment, it's not a convenient way to pay for something. It's usually in the several thousand dollar range. And the problem that cities have is that there's a benefit test attached to special assessments. What that means is if the city asks a property owner to pay a special assessment, they have to prove that the amount that the property owner is paying is equivalent to the benefit to the property, that it's going to increase the value of the property by that amount. And with the volatility in the market right now, and especially in prior years, special assessments are not holding up in court. So when property owners go to court, the cities aren't winning those cases. And the other problem is that maintenance, as we talked about, is very affordable, but it's not always a priority. It's very easy for a city council to defer maintenance when the road looks fine. It's when potholes appear and those more expensive repairs happen that city council members and mayors start hearing from the public. And then finally, tax-exempt properties, for example, churches, hospitals, and college campuses, don't pay property taxes. So property taxpayers are paying a disproportionate amount for those local systems. Just to kind of give you a snapshot of what cities are spending, we learned from the state auditor's numbers that cities budgeted over $476 million for streets in 2012. That includes maintenance and repair costs. The same year, they spent over $153 million for street construction and improvement projects. On the whole, in 2012, that made up 19% of city expenditures. So in spite of significant investments, the municipal street system is aging and funds are not keeping up. In many of the communities, some of which you probably live in, the city built the street system all at the same time when it was developed. And that means it's aged at the same time and needs replacing. Competing priorities mean deferred maintenance and advancing deterioration. We know that it's unlikely, at least in the near future, that a lot more cities will be eligible for municipal state aid. I understand your question, Senator Osmick, about trying to get more cities onto that system, but that's been a difficult fight. Also, we know that special assessments and property taxes are unlikely to become more popular for our property owners. If revenue stays flat and we do nothing, our city streets are going to deteriorate further. I think that our local economies and our state economy will suffer. And finally, and perhaps most concerning, is that property taxpayers will continue to shoulder more and more burden for the replacement costs. I want to briefly touch on an initiative that we hope to bring before you this legislative session, and that is the opportunity for cities to implement street improvement districts. Our initiative would give cities the authority to create districts, and this is, in fact, the league's top transportation priority for the 2013 session. Cities are creatures of the state, and so we can't use authority that isn't explicitly provided in statute. This would be enabling legislation that would allow cities, through city council action, to establish one or more districts within their boundaries. The projects that would happen in those districts would be identified when the district is established, and fees collected within the district would only fund the projects in that plan. This would allow cities to do their maintenance on schedule, provide for new construction, reconstruction, as well as fixed transit infrastructure and trails and pathways. I want to emphasize that this is enabling legislation only. It's modeled after authority that cities already have, things like stormwater utilities and sidewalk improvement districts. We think it's a fair mechanism in that everyone in the district would pay. It allows maintenance and reconstruction to stay on schedule, which is critical. It allows property owners to pay relatively small fees over time. And really, the city council is accountable for creating and managing the district. In conclusion, I wanted to just tell a quick story. I was having lunch with my friend, Mr. Olson, the other day, and in his fortune cookie came this. I hope it's a positive sign about the 2013 session. And with that, I want to thank you again for listening today. I hope that we can be a resource to you at the League, and if you ever need anything from me or from the League, we'll be happy to help you. And with that, I'll turn it over to Todd.
Before we move on to Mr. Olson, Senator Reinert.
Thank you, Chair. Kent, I appreciated you putting in the first part of the presentation the comments about the airport fund. It's been a ritualistic go-to for the legislature when we wanted to spend money we didn't have to transfer funds out of that fund, and then, as you noted, they were put back in 2008 and then immediately taken back in 2009. And you know, hopefully as part of this bigger picture fiscal discussion we're having, one of the things we're going to enforce on ourselves is the discipline that if we dedicate a fund to a revenue to something, that it stays for that something, you know, instead of us grabbing it and spending it somewhere else. So I just appreciate you raising the issue again as a pilot who uses those airports. So
Thank you, Senator Reinert. Senator Osmak, did you have a question?
Yep. Thank you, Madam Chair. As a former city councilman who has sat through a number of assessment hearings, I can agree with you that assessments are not fun situations. And for any of you who haven't sat through a roads assessment hearing, you should go to your local jurisdiction and go through one, because it's about as much fun as pulling teeth. Question on your street improvement districts idea. Where would you be collecting those fees? It seems to me the street improvement district that you're proposing really is just another way of special assessments just put in a different package. Is that sort of a correct way of identifying it?
Ms. Finn?
Madam Chair, Senator Osmak. I think a couple of the selling points with the street improvement district concept is that it would be collected from all properties within the district. So, like it or not, that probably means tax-exempt properties. And what I would envision is a line item on the utility bill, but certainly cities could do it as a line item on the property tax bill if they wanted. I do have an appointment with you tomorrow, so we can talk about this some more if you're interested in it.
I will hold the remainder of my questions for tomorrow.
Thank you, Senator Osmak. Senator Dibble.
Thank you, Madam Chair. To Senator Reinert, something I learned that I actually did not know is that after we pay back the school shift on the list of sins, past sins that we have to address, in state law, should revenues exceed expectation, is repaying the airport fund, which I was pleased to hear about. So that was good. I don't want to ask this question now, but I want to bookmark it for after Mr. Olson's presentation, and that's the cost share with state and county projects subject. I'm curious how that works, but I want to get to Mr. Olson's testimony. So,
okay. Mr. Olson.
Madam Chair, members, my name is Todd Olson. I'm Metro Cities. Now owe Ms. Finn lunch for working that fortune into her presentation. Although I think we'd have been better off if she could have brought a crystal ball. Could have saved us all a lot of time over the next couple of months.
Madam Chair, did Ms. Finn discuss the 62299 subject? Was that what you talked about all during lunch?
Metro Cities is an organization that represents member cities in the seven-county metro area, diverse from the core cities, the inner-ring suburbs, the developing suburbs, exurban suburbs. So we're a diverse mixture of members. Our policies are on areas that we can find consensus on the issues in regards to cities in the metropolitan region. We are an affiliate of the League of Minnesota Cities. We support their position on finding funding for street improvements districts. We're generally supportive of tools. The vast majority of local streets are reliant on property taxes, as Ms. Finn said. Most trips begin and end on a local street, so we're generally supportive of those tools. Street improvement districts, also transit improvement areas and TIF for transit. What sets the metropolitan area apart from greater Minnesota on transportation issues comes down to basically one issue, and that's congestion. MnDOT recently released their 2012 Metropolitan Freeway System Congestion Report. The metro district for MnDOT is comprised of eight counties. It's the seven-county metropolitan area plus Chisago County. And the metro district accounts for approximately 50% of statewide vehicle miles traveled on only about 10% of the state's miles of trunk highway. In 2012, the Metropolitan Freeway System Congestion Report says that our congestion went from 21% in 2011 to 21.4%, which is a slight uptick. Just to provide some historical context for that, in 1993, the percentage of miles of the urban freeway system that were congested was 12.7%. For those that remember the ramp meter discussion, about 10 years ago, it was 21.3%. During the I-35W bridge construction, it was 20.9%. There was a slight downtick of congested miles during the economic downturn, where we had 2 years around 17%, and we've gone up since then to 21.4% last year. The 2010 20-year highway investment plan, MnDOT, is forecasting an increase in metro district congested lane miles, which is freeways, arterials, and collector streets of In 2010, the total 2,879 congested lane miles. By 2030, they were forecasting that an increase to 5,193 congested lane miles. And congested vehicle miles travels also are forecasted to more than double between 2010 and 2030. And also the urban mobility report, which just came out, says that congestion in the metropolitan area costs about 12 gallons a year, 34 hours a year due to congestion in the metropolitan area. We are supportive of the Transportation Economic Development Program. It's a program that's been around for a couple years that provides funding for transportation projects that support economic development. It's run jointly between MnDOT and DEED. There was $25 million in 2012, and there's a list in your packet, I believe, of projects that received funding, also projects that did not receive funding. And these are usually projects where this is just a portion of the funding for the project. So the $25.5 million roughly that were awarded helped move along $115 million in projects across the state. It's a statewide program. 50% goes to Greater Minnesota and 50% stays in the metropolitan area. So we're very supportive of that program. The governor did include $20 million to that program in his budget this coming year in his recommendation. The Transportation Finance Advisory Committee, which met over the last year, and I believe you heard an update from last week, did a great job of identifying the need for transportation dollars over the next 30 years. Our policies at Metro Cities, again, the consensus of the cities in the metropolitan areas, we strongly support stable and sufficient statewide transportation funding and local tools to meet the long-term transportation system needs of our region. And transit in the metro area is operated by the suburban transit providers and the Metro Council to set up a system to serve the region. And our Metro Cities, again, supports an effective, efficient, and comprehensive regional transit system as an invaluable component in meeting the multimodal transportation needs of the metropolitan region and of the region's economic vibrancy and quality of life.
Thank you, Mr. Olson. Members, any questions? Senator Dibble.
Thanks. So the cost share, this comes up with the, I think the counties bring this up as well when state projects come through. It triggers costs sometimes unexpectedly, certainly not optional. Can we just learn a little bit more about how that works?
Madam Chair and Senator Dibble, I don't have the formula calculates the cost share, but we know that in recent years the local cost participation has increased dramatically, and we've heard that repeatedly. I would ask maybe to call a friend here, see if Ms. Gallman would talk about what they're hearing at the department.
Ms. Gallman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I guess I would echo the same thing. As we're doing projects, people are asking for more than just strictly functional roads anymore, and MnDOT's reaction to that is we pay for the traffic to get through. We're paying for the mobility piece, and we tend to say the pretty piece is a local cost, and the cities want to have an attractive downtown, and so they find themselves paying for the sidewalks, for the extra features, all of which are wonderful, and we want to do them, but MnDOT has a limited amount of money, and we also have some constitutional ties as it has to benefit the trunk highway system. And I would agree that, yes, there are more and more costs being pushed down to the counties and to the cities.
Well, Ms. Fan. Madam Chair, one other addition to that is, in some cases, it's moving utilities or doing things that have to happen as part of a project, but that really isn't the responsibility of the department.
Thank you, Ms. Fan. Senator Dibble.
Thanks. And I know the county folks are listening. What I also hear about is roadway improvements themselves. Should the city need or want access to an arterial or collector that's coming through that's owned by another jurisdiction, or sometimes the improvements they extend back onto municipally owned facilities. That's certainly true in the county's case. Ramps to get onto state highways, limited access highways, and the like. And also some of these approaches as well to the state-owned facilities.
Something I actually didn't know a lot about until, and I still don't know a lot about, obviously, but I'm becoming more aware of, and so I think it's important for the committee to understand, because not necessarily asking permission from these other jurisdictions as these larger jurisdictions are coming through with their projects, and so it's hard to anticipate and program, and it's creating pressure on the property tax and on the state aid systems.
Thank you, Senator Dibble. Senator Kiffmeyer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And while I'm sympathetic to your situation, to me, I think it's just another name. When you call it a street improvement district, it's just going to be an automatic tax on property. And so I don't know. It seems as though that in this situation, you wouldn't have to ask permission or hold hearings or do some of that. You could just apply it and not have to go through some of what you're talking about. But I look at it as, whether it's in my township or in the city, one of the major values in the property taxes is the roads that everybody uses all the time. I mean, it is really a right use of property taxes in prioritizing your funds in that regard. One of the questions that I have for you is that there's always a situation where our buildings and our infrastructure ages. I mean, we all know that happens in our homes. We save up for those things or set money aside. Are you able in your budgeting process to set aside funds for capital expenditures or items like this so that when they come due, as they will, you might have some depth of resource there to use for them?
Ms. Finn?
Madam Chair and Senator Kiffmeyer, a lot of cities do plan very well for those projects. But I think that in recent years, some of that has been harder to do because of other fiscal challenges. In some cases, we've had levy limits blinking off and on. And we've also had criticism from the state auditor when cities have fund reserves. So, you know, it's a tricky thing for some cities to navigate.
Senator Kiffmeyer.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. That is exactly it. I found sometimes because it's kind of there's a difference between a cash reserve that is cash flow oriented versus the being able to set aside for future bridges, building replacements, just number of things that you know are going to come due and that you can set those things aside. Is there any mechanism in our current state law or process that you are able to designate that and that might pass muster by the state auditor?
Ms. Van?
Madam Chair and Senator Kiffmeyer, I'm sure there is. I mean, I think that that cities do have reserve funds and they're line itemed on a property tax statement. But again, those are, in some situations, not attractive to the city council. It's a way of planning.
Mr. Olson.
And thank you, Madam Chair. And Senator Kiffmeyer, one part of the Street Improvement District proposal is the funds collected within the district would have to be spent within the same district on street improvement. So it would be a separate fund set up to be saved for improvements and maintenance for the roads.
Okay, Madam Chair, maybe we'll hear more about this at another time. I would really like to hear more about that because but is that the case? We will hear more,
Senator
Dibble? Madam Chair. So we'll fully hear this idea when it's brought forward. Absolutely,
Senator Pratt.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Mr. Olson. You were talking about congestion as in percentage terms. Can you tell me, was that percent of miles? Was that percent of time? What was the ratio you were quoting?
The congestion in the freeway system congestion report, I believe that's measured in AM and PM hours, and it's the number of miles that are congested between the peak hours.
Okay.
In the system.
Senator Pratt.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Olson. I'm new to the legislature. I'm tying things together. Do you have any sense of how much of the congestion is caused by deferred maintenance versus lack of lane miles?
I don't know that I could answer that. I know MnDOT has changed to large expansion projects to being more focused on low-cost, high turn projects.
Okay. Thank you.
Any further questions? Senator Osmick.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think I was going to hold this one, but I think it's important for the rest of the committee to hear. With regard to the special, the street improvement districts, you're talking about fees that I think, and I think you mentioned that there would be something that would be added to maybe your water bill or some other city fee structure. In that case, it removes when, because I've been putting them on people's property taxes, it removes tax deductibility from the equation. So, and you're agreeing with me, I think that's something to consider very strongly when you're looking at these, that making it a fee, you lose an incredible amount of tax deductibility on existing code, only because I was doing my taxes the last couple of weeks and I had a special assessment I needed to put on there. So I'm glad to see you agree with me.
Ms. Finn.
Well, Madam Chair, and Senator Osmick, if they wanted to go the utility bill route, this would be up to the City Council. Yes, it would be a fee and it would not be deductible, but it would also capture revenue from tax-exempt property, and we think that distributing some of that cost over more properties would be helpful.
Thank you, Ms. Finn. Any further questions? Thank you very much. And next, we will have a presentation on county transportation. And we have John McDonald from Faribault County, Mark Krebsbach from Dakota County, Abby Bryduck from the Association of Minnesota Counties, and Steve Novak from Minnesota Intercounty Association. When
it's
you're
nice
ready.
It's nice when that works. Well, good afternoon. I'm John McDonald. I'm the Faribault County Engineer, and I am the past president of the Minnesota County Engineers Association. It's great to be with you this afternoon. We've got some slides. I know we've been through an awful lot this afternoon, and we'll kind of try to get right through it. Slide here, Julie Skallman from MnDOT had a similar slide. Here, what I'd like to point on here is off to the right side, the local roads. It was said before during the city presentation that all trips begin and end on a local road. I don't know where you came from today, but I live on a township road, and that's where I'll be. That's where I left from this morning and be heading home tonight. 89% of the miles in the state of Minnesota are local. They carry almost 41% of the vehicle miles traveled on local roads. County roads and county state aid highways account for 45,000 miles, a third of the miles in the state, and almost 25% of the vehicle miles traveled are on county roads or county state aid highways. When we talk about the county system, there's really two different roadway systems we talk about when people talk about the county. There's the county state aid highway system. It's about just over 30,000 miles, about two-thirds of the total county miles. There's also county roads. The difference between the two is county state aid highways carry more traffic. They connect traffic generators to state highways. In my neck of the woods and more rural areas, most of your bituminous surface roads or the hard surface roads are county state aid highways. And down in Faribault County, all county roads are gravels. I've got some gravels that are county state aid highways, but for the most part, the Casas carry more traffic. It's kind of an easy way to remember that. So. The next few slides, Ms. Gallman covered from MnDOT very well, talked about the Highway Users Tax Distribution Fund and the main revenue sources for that. The 62299, that's constitutionally breakdown of that fund. I believe she discussed the apportionment formula for the old money, the 20-cent a gallon gas tax, how that's presented, split up throughout the state. And then the excess formula for the new money from the 2008 bill with the 40% for vehicle registration and 60% needs. That was kind of a compromise from AMC was involved heavily in that to get a bill passed in 2000. That's kind of how county highways are funded. Now, County roads, a little different animal. They're not eligible for any of the county state aid funds. It's not eligible when you pay when you buy a gallon of gas. That money doesn't go into the county funds. That's revenue sources is mostly from property taxes. In the metro area, you can put, some of the counties have put a $5 a vehicle wheelage tax on. And if your county's lucky enough to have a gravel pit in it, you can put an aggregate tax on to raise some more money that way. So there's some other funding sources there as well. Next graph, I'd just like to point out we talked about needs and what that is to cost that it would take to bring a road up to standards. It's 12-foot lanes or whatever is required. Just like to go over to the far right-hand column that shows that unmet needs are, we're about half of what we should be at. Kind of a rough number there. It's kind of interesting hearing some of the cities and townships. That's kind of a reoccurring theme that you're hearing today, I'm sure. In addition to state funds and local funds, there's also federal funds that are available. Statewide, there's about $100 million annually of federal funds that are available. These are distributed through the ATP, through the eight ATP area transportation partnerships that follow the MnDOT districts. It's a competitive process where you apply for money for various projects and compete against other projects in your district. What's eligible for these projects? Every road that you go on is functionally classified. You heard some talk about it earlier today, where you have a local road. Roads are either classified as being local, collectors, arterials, or as interstates. And the collectors are further split up into minor collectors and major collectors. Through MAP 21, the new federal law, being major collectors and above being eligible, are eligible for federal funding. So that would show that 59% of the CASA system is eligible, and then combined with the county road system, it'd be 42% of the CASAs and county roads would be eligible for federal funding. And then all bridges are eligible for federal funding as well. So this has been before it was kind of a 30,000 view look at the transportation funding. So how does that affect folks down in Faribault County, or back where I'm from? This is a graph I gave to my county board last Tuesday showing our share of the Highway Users Tax Distribution Fund for Faribault County. Give you a few facts about the county and the road system that I'm responsible for. We have about 350 miles of CASA. Of that, there's about 280 miles that have hard surface roads. We have another 100 miles of county road that we're responsible for. And there's about 250 bridges in Faribault County. And then, like I mentioned, our share of the Highway Users Tax Distribution Fund for 2013, the far right-hand side there, is about just at $4.3 million. As Ms. Skolman stated in her presentation, that's split up 60% for construction. So that's about $2.6 million. And that sounds like a lot of money, and it is, until you figure out we're going to do a project in the city of Wells this year. We're going to reconstruct about 10 blocks of a city street there. It's going to cost us about $1.3 million. We have a county state aid highway that there's an elevator on it that we need to, they're doing some improvements on the elevator. We need to upgrade that road. Right now it's a very narrow road with 11-foot lanes and a 1 or 2 foot shoulder. A lot of truck traffic on it. It's a dangerous situation. We need to rebuild that road, and that's going to cost us between $800,000 and $1 million a mile to get that done. So you can do the math, and that $2.6 million, that really doesn't get us very far. So with that, so what happens? So what do we do? Well, we end up in Faribault County, we end up deferring projects or delaying projects. The next map is what I also gave to the county board that shows a little history of when was the last time we did a major project or reconstructed those 280 miles of bituminous surface road in the county. They're color-coded on the left side there, you can see. And we've got some roads in Faribault County we haven't worked on since the Reagan administration. It's been a long time since we've been down County Road 21 and done much anything on that road. And it's really starting to show So what happens, we heard a lot of, I hear a lot of anecdotal evidence about, geez, John, that road is rougher than I'll get out. I'm driving down County Road 2 and I spilled coffee all over myself because the road is so rough. And I hear that all the time. And it's here, we've got some, the next slide shows some evidence of that. Skalman had mentioned that MnDOT had purchased through state aid funds a pavement testing van. And it's really a neat thing. They showed up in 2008, and it's got all the sensors on it. You can drive around and measure the roughness of a road. And they drove all our roads in our county, and they gave us what they call a ride quality index, which is a measurement of how rough the road is. It's a value goes from 1, which is really rough, to 5, which is a brand new road. And in 2007, the RQI, or the ride quality index, was 3.07. So that gave us a benchmark to go off. They came back 4 years later in 2011 and did the same thing, rode over the same roads with the same van, and our the ride quality index had gone down to just under 2.9. So it's some empirical evidence we have that says, hey, things are getting rougher out there. You see that with MnDOT can produce the same kind of map. And this color-coded map shows where the poor roads are. And under the same funding levels that we're at, I foresee more of the pink throughout the county. We're going to end up with more roads in poor condition. The situation we have in Faribault County is that it's great ground to grow corn and soybeans on. You ask any farmer down there what his yield last year compared to what it was 20 years ago, it's probably gone up, pick your number, 25-30%. So even though we have fewer people living in the county, we have a lot more loads going over our roads. We have a lot more, we might have fewer hog farmers, but we probably have more hogs and that have to be transported over our roads. So we're seeing that in our pavements. At our current funding levels, our pavement conditions will inevitably deteriorate. In regards to bridges, I mentioned we have 250 bridges in the county. We're seeing the same thing. This is a bridge 3 miles southwest of Blue Earth. It's an old timber bridge that was built in the early 1960s. It's had its useful life is done. We do safety inspections on most of our structures every year. The guys went down there and came back and said, "Geez, John, this bridge, you don't want to drive over it." Went and looked at it. Sure enough, the timber piling in there are pretty well shot, and we need to replace this structure. To replace this bridge is going to cost us on the order of $400,000. Again, that comes out of that $2.6 million. Now, we might be able to get bridge bonding to help in some of that. We might be able to get federal funding if we got enough time to work it into our system. But, again, that's some more stresses that we have on our system. And I'm sure the gentleman from the township had the same thing. He could tell us the same thing, that they've got the number of bridges that they need to get money on to replace to get in their system as well. So that's what I have from a rural perspective. I guess Mr. Krebsbach here from Dakota County can give a talk about what issues they face.
Thank you. I am Mark Krebsbach, the Dakota County Engineer, and I'm also one of the co-chairs for the Minnesota County Engineers Association Legislative Committee. Appreciate the opportunity to be here and talk a little bit about some of the challenges facing our transportation system in Dakota County. This first map that I have up today reflects a discussion we've already had a little bit today. Of the transportation system. And what these routes show, the ones that are highlighted here, show some of the older routes in Dakota County. Most of these take place in the northern part of the county, the more urbanized areas, communities like West St. Paul, South St. Paul, Mendota Heights, and in the rural part of the county. Parts of Dakota County is rural, still a fairly significant agricultural county, where the growth hasn't been happening, our infrastructure is aging. And what this map shows is that about a quarter of our current highway system, of our 440-mile highway system, 117 miles to be exact, are currently more than 60 years old since they were last reconstructed. And if we were just to let the system go further between now and 2030, that by 2030, 220 miles, essentially half of our county highway system would be 60 years or older. And we heard Ms. Finn talk about how preservation techniques and maintenance techniques go a long way towards maximizing the life of our system, and this is true. We are seeing much longer but the roads don't last forever. And all of these roads that show up on this map will need attention sometime in the next 20 to 30 years beyond your typical overlays or seals, something more along the lines of reconstruction. And you've heard the costs, $1 million, $200 million, or $2 million a mile. There are substantial costs to address these needs. The next map is something that we're dealing with in the metro area as well. This is congestion. You heard a little bit about this with the municipal presentation also. This map shows where we're experiencing capacity issues, and as you would expect, this is in the growing area of our county, communities like Lakeville, Apple Valley, Burnsville, Egan, Senator Carlson's area. We are seeing growth, and with that growth comes more traffic and congestion. This map shows what we anticipate based on planned land use within the county for increasing congestion on our county highways. And by 2030, about 127 miles of our highway system is expected to be at or approaching capacity, about 30% of the overall county system. Along with that, we also have county highway to county highway intersections that are experiencing significant traffic growth. And in our on our county system alone, not counting connections to trunk highways, but just county highway to county highway connections, we expect to have 8 intersections over 70,000 vehicles a day entering those intersections. That's about the volume where you start to have the need for a grade-separated interchange instead of a traffic signal controlled at-grade intersection. And with costs in the range of $20 to $25 million per location, again, pretty substantial costs to meet the growth in Dakota County, which is expected to be about 100,000 new residents between now and 2030. And then finally, I want to talk a little bit about our transit needs in Dakota County. This map shows some of the existing public transit that is in place and that we're developing. We are lucky to have new bus rapid transit system development on the east side of the county, which is shown by the orange and red lines heading up on this map. They are the Metro Orange Line, which is the I-35W BRT, the Metro Red Line, which is the Cedar Avenue BRT, along with the existing fixed route transit service, which is shown by the thinner lines. As you can see, a lot of Dakota County is not served by public transit at this time. Even significant communities like Hastings and Rosemont have no or very limited fixed route transit service. We view transit as being a very important alternative for us for congestion, as a means to help with our growing population with those 100,000 new residents, and of course to help with the aging population as their transportation needs change over the coming years. So another important part of what we see as our needs in future transportation is that increased investment in both transit capital and the operating funds then to provide those services for transit users in Dakota County. A little bit of a breakdown of where our funding comes from to try and meet these transportation needs. Currently, our overall transportation budget on an annual basis is just under about $40 million for Dakota County transportation needs. About a quarter of that comes from property tax levy. And in recent years, we have been putting some of the county program aid in as a substitute for property tax, kind of as a hedge against potential cuts in that program aid, so we're not affecting other county operations. But traditionally, about a quarter of our resources for transportation have come from the county property tax. The next line, the second line down, shows that $5 wheelage tax that has been referenced in some discussion here. Dakota County initiated that in 2006. We collect about $1.7 million a year for that from that $5 wheelage tax. That's enough money for us to pay for our pavement preservation on the non-state aid eligible portion of the system. In other words, our county highway system, non-CASA part. And you know, when we talked with our board about instituting that wheelage tax, it was viewed as a more palatable alternative to the increased burden on the property tax. There was significantly higher acceptance by the constituents viewing it as a user fee and knowing it went for road and bridge needs within the county. I'd like to just mention the county state aid highway apportionment. Dakota County gets about $10 million a year for construction purposes. About three quarters of our 440 miles of highways are state aid eligible, yet that $10 million makes up just over a quarter of our total transportation needs. So I think it shows kind of the disparity in state funding as it relates to the overall transportation needs of our system. And then finally, the last line above there is the Regional Railroad Authority levy. Those are the dollars that we're using as our capital investment to help with transit infrastructure and developing those BRT lines in Dakota County. Finally, kind of the end of the story, we updated our overall transportation system plan in 2004 and just recently adopted that an updated version of that plan again in 2012, so an eight-year period. Back in 2004, we were looking out to the year 2025 and identified transportation needs to maintain the current level of service that we have in our system at about $1 billion, with revenues of about $600 million to meet those needs, so about 60% of what we anticipated. In 2012, when we just adopted our plan, we identified about $1.25 billion of needs, and a growth in revenue largely due to the transportation bill that passed in 2008, increasing our revenue to $658 million over the planned period of 2030. But with that, our shortfall grew to almost $600 million. And John talked about the 49% in CASA needs. If you do the math here, Dakota County transportation needs are funded at about 47.5%, very similar. A lot of that change wasn't due just only to the needs, but you heard earlier about the cost of construction increasing. And those costs have increased at a significantly higher rate than what we're seeing in transportation funding increases over this period. So with that, I'll let Abby talk about some initiatives AMC is moving forward with.
Thank you. Hi, my name is Abby Breideck. I am a policy analyst with the Association of Minnesota Counties. Thank you for your time today and your attention. As we've said, some of these things have been discussed in an earlier presentation, so I'll gloss over the redundancies. Our county engineers talked about the challenges they've been facing and some of their responses: increased property taxes, increased dependence on borrowing, and most importantly, deferred projects and maintenance, which are really starting to become safety issues for our roads and bridges. The state responded to some of these challenges. Some of you have been around since the 2008 bill. Some of you haven't, but one thing they added, oh, that's not the 2008 bill necessarily, but the addition of the Local Road Improvement Program, which is a bonding program that has especially been of help to rural Minnesota. Unfortunately, it hasn't gotten as much funding as we'd like to see. Last year, there was $10 million appropriated, and it was earmarked to mostly the metro area. And the year before that was $10 million as well. But we have to remember that money has to be split three ways between the townships, the cities, and the counties. So each system ends up with a little over $3 million. And just to give some context, you know, obviously there are variants, but maybe a mile worth of overlay could be $500,000. So divided three ways across the entire state, doesn't help much. So we'd like to see an increase of emphasis on that funding program. We've done better with local bridge bonding. I suspect a lot of that has to do with the bridge collapse, where it sort of brought attention to the safety of our bridges. Last year, we got $30 million for that. Here's my 2008 slide. In 2008, there was a transportation bill. First increase we've had, well, I think the only increase in about 25 years, Steve Novak estimates, he's been around. Increased the gas tax total of 8.5 cents. We removed the cap for the tab fees and dedicated the motor vehicle sales tax to transportation with a split of 60% to roads, 40% to transit. That breaks down further for transit to 36% metro and 4% rural. And these formulas and these splits were highly scrutinized and agreed to. And that's where we are today. The most important thing about these funding sources is that they're constitutionally dedicated to transportation, a good thing to remember. We believe that the solution is to leverage those constitutionally dedicated streams. We'd like to see an increase in state aid and other targeted state funding through the gas tax, tab fees, the motor vehicle sales tax. Another idea that's been discussed is a sales tax on gas. It's not constitutionally dedicated. But we could do that if we so chose. But it, you see an automatic increase with the increase in the price of gas, which is a problem. Part of the problem with gas taxes, it doesn't do that. So the power, the purchasing power, just continues to erode year after year. Again, bonding is a great solution right now. We have low interest rates. I mentioned the lack of options in many of the greater Minnesota counties to raise revenues for their roads and bridges. This could especially help with our 10-ton roads and farm-to-market arteries in the way of economic development. We can also use trunk highway bonds. The general obligation bonds can be used on non-trunk highway roads, whereas the trunk highway bonds must be used on trunk highway roads. They're limited right now, but if we could raise some revenue, that would also raise the bonding capacity, which would help. And then I'll just say a couple words. AMC has would like to see some new revenue this year. We'd like to see a balanced, comprehensive package that addresses the metro and the rural areas, roads and bridges, and transit. A couple specific things we'd like to see are some increased local government tools, added local government tools, one of which would be expanding the wheelage tax statewide. Right now, only the metro area has the authority to levy that tax. We'd like to see that as an option for greater Minnesota as well. We'd also like to increase the allowable amount from $5 to up to $20. And this, you know, talking to different counties, you know, would be a good option. You know, it doesn't raise as much for each county, but Dakota's had some great success, as we've heard. But other counties could use it for a particular project, blink it on, blink it off, save up to do some projects, use it for maintenance. They could decide it, and this can go to their systems where they don't get any state funding. Another thing we'd like to see is to remove the referendum requirement for the greater Minnesota sales tax for local roads and bridges. This would put the decision back onto the county board, like with the wheelage tax. This would help also with counties who may have more seasonal traffic, or they might be able to raise more funds this way rather than just on their residents who own vehicles. Oh, and I'll just clarify, some people confuse that the wheelage tax isn't per wheel, it's per vehicle. So the ones that are, the what's levied now is $5 per vehicle at registration time. So that's all I have. Here's my contact information, and I'll pass it on over to Steve Novak.
Thank you. For the record, my name is Steve Novak. I'm a lobbyist for the Minnesota Inter-County Association, MICA. Minnesota Inter-County Association, MICA, is a research and lobbying organization started about 45 years ago to represent what is now 12 counties in the state in the areas of tax, budget, health and human services, criminal justice, and for today's purposes, transportation. We represent a significant percentage of Minnesota's total population and include the following counties. I'll just list them alphabetically. Benton, Blue Earth, Carver, Dakota, Olmsted, Rice, St. Louis, Scott, Sherburne, Stearns, Washington, and Winona. So if you look at a map of Minnesota, basically we're the suburban counties that surround Minneapolis, St. Paul, Hennepin, and Ramsey. And then we represent a variety of the larger non-metro greater Minnesota counties that have large regional centers, St. Louis County, Duluth, Olmsted County, Rochester, Blue Earth County, Mankato, Winona for Winona, Stearns for St. Cloud. So you get the idea. And over the last couple of decades, for their own purposes, I think these counties came to understand that they had a lot of common purposes, and as a result, it's been a strong organization representing their issues for some time now. Two of our counties, Dakota and Washington, are also member of the CTIB organization, which basically was created out of the 2008 Transportation Funding Package, stands for County Transit Improvement Board, and of course it's been the major vehicle that's been building the rail systems and also expanding various types of other transit modes. Dakota County with the Cedar Bus Lane, Washington County looking at a project called Gateway, and there's a lot of possibilities there. MICA as an organization historically has had strong affiliations both directly and indirectly with the Minnesota Association of Counties. As was just stated, we share almost all, if not all, of the goals that were stated by Abby, and also the Minnesota Transportation Alliance, and as a result, we've historically been an organization, as I think we will be this year, as we are this year, hoping and supporting what we hope turns out to be a comprehensive statewide transportation funding package. As was stated earlier by just about everybody, as you now start to get a picture of the whole transportation system in Minnesota as defined by roads and bridges, the county state aid road system is over twice as large as the state highway system. There's almost no place in Minnesota that you get on a state highway without first having to be on a county road. So the maintenance and care of that system is significant and ongoing. And with one gas tax increase in the last quarter century, the system has been slipping in this and other areas, as has been stated. We do support a comprehensive transportation funding program. I've also included in your packets a listing of some of the other specific transportation issues that is supported by MICA. I've had the privilege of meeting with a number of you one-on-one, and I think I can say with clarity that I've got the rest of you scheduled over the next couple of weeks where we can go into some of these issues in more detail. As was mentioned, in terms of some specific local transportation resources, an expansion of the wheelage tax is something that's very important to us. We went into some detail with the impact in Dakota County. It's equally strong in Washington County, about $1 million a year. And it's a tax that, or a fee that the public seems to accept relatively positively because it's modest and they seem to like the idea that it's spent locally. And our county engineers, know what to do with the money in terms of where the problems are, the kinds of things that can be fixed quickly that don't necessarily involve the big, significant projects. But if it's in your neighborhood or it's a dangerous intersection or there's a need for various things like that, it's a fund that allows those things to be fixed. So I'll just leave you with one final thought. I know personally the wide range of issues that you're going to have to consider over the next few months. All of the different areas where people are requesting major funding for valid needs. But if in the end you're looking or forced to shorten that list, and for whatever combination of reasons you decide that you want to find a solution to a problem that relates directly to jobs in the economy, I would offer up any combination of resources you come up with that puts money in the hands of counties and in the able hands of county engineers, because I can guarantee you that there's meaningful projects that are designed and ready to go. The only thing literally that's missing is the money. And there's a lot of positives about it. I would say that kind of a funding scenario is the ultimate public-private relationship that we all like to talk about in our speeches, whether it's the state or another public resource creating the financial resource, the gas tax, the registration fee, the wheelage tax. Those monies then filter down into the able hands of these county engineers or state engineers who design these projects and create the framework for the project that needs to be built. Then those public dollars are put out on bid to the private sector, construction companies, who almost always employed very well-paid people, fully benefited people in most cases because of a whole other set of laws. And they go out and they resurface those roads, they build those bridges, they build those intersections. And as a result, what you produce is an improvement in the infrastructure for Minnesota's overall economy that has a very long shelf life, anywhere from 20 to 50 years. So you're making a permanent improvement, helps the overall economy. You're providing jobs in the private sector with public resources. I would offer this up as a public-private partnership that really makes sense and is very easily defensible with the public as compared to a lot of other ways that public dollars are spent. So with that, I'll end for today and appreciate the opportunity to be in front of the committee and welcome any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Novak. Questions, members? Senator Carlson.
I have one question that I'm not sure who would like to answer it, but it's always bothered me. Back in the time when Dakota County initiated the wheelage tax, there, if I remember correctly, the law stated that you had to have a commensurate reduction in property tax, which you know, in Dakota County increased the property tax and then reduced it by the wheelage tax. But it kind of suggests that there that those funds were equal and perhaps even commingled. Is the wheelage tax, does that go into a specific fund and is kept separate from the from other taxes in the county, and is it totally dedicated towards transportation?
Mr. Krebsbach?
Madam Chair, Senator Carlson, that when the law was originally written for the wheelage tax, I believe it was from the mid-1970s, and at that time there were separate road and bridge levies in a lot of counties, and it was kind of written to address the way that the accounting was done quite some time ago. More recently, the levy has become the levy, and at least in Dakota County, those funds are distributed to various uses out of the county general fund. And so when we researched this back at the time we went into the wheelage tax, there were some kind of odd mechanics that had to take place, but because we didn't have a separate road and bridge levy, there wasn't a levy to have a commensurate reduction because of the wheelage tax. So the wheelage tax really became a stand-in for other levy funds that would have gone to transportation. And I may, I remember right in 2008, I thought that some of the language that referred to that old offset may have been removed from the wheelage tax legislation. I just haven't looked back at it since we instituted the tax. But I think some of that language has been revised to address the very issue that you bring up.
Okay.
Ms. Berzofsky.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Senators. I just wanted to point out that the wheelage tax is actually mentioned in the Constitution in the highway article, and it talks about the registration tax, vehicle registration tax, and it says that that tax is in lieu of all other taxes thereon, excuse me, except wheelage taxes imposed by political subdivisions solely for highway purposes.
Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Carlson. Mm-hmm. Any other questions, members? Thank you, folks, for a very helpful presentation. Good information. Well, unless we have any other issues or business, then we will be adjourned for today.
I'm sure I thought I would just preview Wednesday. We have a couple of, Michael, want to help us out? We have a couple of bills, right? Several bills, five or more bills, so come ready to work, and then we're going to have show and tell. So we'll hear presentations from projects, specific projects from around the state.
Thank you, Senator Dibble, and with that, we will be adjourned. Thank you.